Hello, I'm Michelle Hanratty. Welcome to Sound Optometry, the podcast from Docket that provides high-quality, continuing professional development for GOC-registered optometrists. You can gain one CPD point by listening to this podcast and completing the short exercise on our website, docket.info. This month's episode continues with a theme of mental well-being. In our last episode, we explored why optometrists might be particularly susceptible to stress and burnout. So this is a really important topic for all of us, whether it impacts us personally or we see the effects of stress in our colleagues. It is important that even if we ourselves are not affected, that we recognise when colleagues are struggling and provide support whilst respecting their feelings and privacy. This time, we're returning to the roots of this podcast. Some of you will remember hearing Advances in Optometry, where we explored scientific research that could change optometric practice in the future. The scientific research that we're exploring today will give us new insights into what is happening at a physiological level when we're stressed. And later on, we'll find out how stress affects the way we think and behave and learn how to better protect our brains for the future with Professor Vanya Djurek, a neuroscientist in Iowa.
I like to use the term brain health rather than mental health. It's important to remember that brain is just another organ, just like a heart. If something is going on with your heart or cardiovascular system, you'll go and get it checked out, maybe change your lifestyle, take some medications if necessary. We definitely need to keep our brains in good physical shape or good condition.
We've taken the approach that the more we understand our body's reaction to stress, the more motivated we'll be to make changes in our personal and professional lives. So, to set us off with an overview of our physiological responses, I'm joined by Anna Whitaker, a professor of behavioural medicine at the University of Stirling. She's a health psychologist who conducts research into physical activity and health. Thanks for joining me, Anna.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Anna, in our last episode, we talked about the mental health impact of stress. Can we start today by asking you about what type of stress has an impact on our physiology?
All types of stress have an impact on your physiology. So there's chronic stress, which is more like weeks to months to years, which can have an ongoing effect. And then there's acute stress, which is more like seconds, minutes to hours, where you see more of a short-term reaction, and then hopefully your body goes back to normal afterwards.
And is there something different about different types of stress that makes some more harmful than others?
Yeah, some types of stress are worse for you if they make you feel like you can't cope with them, or they're an uncontrollable situation, or if you feel they're too difficult for you, or if you feel you're being evaluated by other people. All of those things can contribute to having a larger stress response.
And before we actually get on to talking about how the body responds to stress in the short term, you mentioned the perceived inability to cope. How important is that? Because I thought stress was sometimes a good thing for us as well.
Stress is a good thing up to a point. So initially you need a bit of stress, and we need the physiological response as well, because it motivates us. It makes us mobilize our energy resources. It sends key cells to areas of the body that they might be needed in, and various things like that. But it gets to a point where the demands are getting too high. And actually, it then affects your performance, and you go back down again out the other side, and it becomes detrimental.
So what you're talking about there is the stress curve, where a small amount of stress is helpful, but too much is bad for us. That's a useful thing for us to all bear in mind. So that's psychological stress, but isn't exercise a form of stress as well? And that's supposed to be good for us.
Exercise is a form of stress, but you tend to recover quickly afterwards, and you're mobilizing energy that you then use through doing the exercise. So that can be really positive for the body. Whereas often psychological stress, you know, you might not be using any energy much. You might be sat down, but you're still mobilizing responses and mobilizing energy. But it's actually psychologically that you're having to deal with it, which is not quite as good for the body.
So when we are feeling stressed, and psychologically stressed, that is, and we're feeling a bit overwhelmed by the daily demands on us, what's actually happening in our bodies?
So one of the first things that happens is your heart rate and your blood pressure increase. So your heart is pumping out more blood, and you know, sometimes you can feel your heart racing, but not always. And then there's a slightly slower response, which is a stress hormone called cortisol that takes slightly longer to respond, but again is about mobilizing energy. And we need all of these responses. They're a good thing, but it's when they go on too long or too high that there can be a problem.
So I have heard about cortisol, but can you tell me a little bit more about cortisol and what it does?
Yeah, so cortisol is the endpoint of a stress response axis called the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis. So it's released from our adrenal glands. And it's a good thing because it does things like dampen down inflammation. It converts some of the fuel or food that we've had into energy sources that we can use. But if that response goes on too long, you can end up going too far by dampening down too much of the immune system. And then you haven't got that acute response that you need to other types of challenge.
And what does this mean for optometrists in terms of their health?
I think longer term effects of having raised cortisol can be, it might start affecting your mood, it can affect weight gain, it can affect people's sleep, and it can affect their immune system because it directly acts on the immune system. So there are quite a few different effects that all interact with each other that you might see.
And you may not even be aware that these effects are happening in your body either, because they are often hidden, aren't they?
Absolutely. You certainly can't tell if your cortisol is going up or not. Sometimes we test people in the lab with a stress protocol and they think they're really stressed. And then when we actually look at their physiological measures, there's not much changing at all. And sometimes people think their heart is racing, but actually it isn't when we measure that.
So why do you think that might be?
I think in some types of people, there's a bit of a disconnect, and perhaps it might be they've had a stress response so repeatedly because of a situation they're in, maybe that's uncontrollable, or because of something earlier in their life. So their system resets and therefore isn't responding as much. And I think on the other hand, we're just not always as good at perceiving what our bodies are doing as we think we are. It's called interoception, and we're not always that great at knowing how fast our heart's beating.
So if we are stressed and we do have raised cortisol levels and it's impairing our sleep, what are the effects of this long term?
In the long term, it will do one of two things. Cortisol has a feedback loop that's built in so that it can switch itself off if it's going to be raised for too long. So you'll either reset your natural levels of cortisol and therefore have low levels, which might mean you're not as good at mobilizing energy and responding to things when you do need to. Or on the other hand, some people sometimes we see have chronically high levels of cortisol, and therefore that can impact on the immune system.
So many of us, you know, me included, have a smartwatch that tracks the body's response to stress. And there was a day where I had zero cardio load. It also told me that my body responses were zero. Does that mean that I wasn't feeling stressed or I wasn't nervous? Does that mean I'm coping well?
The problem with smartwatches is they don't always know what you're doing at the time. So they're making an estimate based on just your heart rate and maybe a few other measures, but they haven't got the psychological input. So you could still be feeling really stressed, but you might be sat down or lying down and therefore your heart rate wouldn't be changing much at all.
So just because you're not reacting physically doesn't mean that you're not at risk from stress.
Absolutely.
So what are the factors that could affect the way someone responds to stress?
One of the factors we've been looking at recently is because of something earlier in their life. Someone's had a lot of stress as a child or an adolescent, or even if they've got a lot of stress in their lives now, this seems to reset the way that you respond to more acute stresses, so daily hassles and stress at work. And you might have less of a physiological response. So while that might be protective, in the long run, it's not going to be so good for your system.
And do certain medications or health conditions affect the response to stress as well?
Yes. So if you're taking anything that might mimic cortisol, the stress hormone, so some steroids, then you're having an extra dose of that, which might not be good for you.
And what about age? Does that affect the way we respond to stress?
Aging is an interesting one because as you get older, most of the research seems to show that your cortisol stress hormone levels stay about the same or maybe go up slightly. But the problem is that there's another hormone called DHEA, which dampens down the effects of cortisol, and that massively declines as you get older from the age of 25 onwards.
That sounds depressing.
I know, isn't it awful? So it just means, you know, your body is less able to sort of modify the levels of cortisol because you haven't got this DHEA hormone to balance it out.
So in the short term, we can reduce the stress in our working lives sometimes, but we can't always do that. So what can we do to try and mitigate this issue?
One of the best things you can do is be physically active. And it doesn't mean you have to be going to the gym or being part of like an exercise class or a sports club. It's just being as active as you possibly can and breaking up that sedentary time.
We've all heard about the 10,000 steps a day is good for you. Is that a myth or is there any science behind that?
It's a little bit of a myth, but there's a lot more research evidence around trying to get 150 minutes per week of moderate activity.
So how do you know if you're getting to that moderate level of activity?
Moderate physical activity is like where you're definitely feeling that your heart's beating faster and that you're a bit out of breath, but you can still hold a conversation. Not very easily, but you can.
Okay, so you do need to put some effort in. How long does each session have to be?
So the literature used to say, well, you wouldn't see benefits until it was about 10 minutes of doing something like, you know, fairly fast walking. But actually now we know that any physical activity is beneficial and you can actually accumulate it through the day in short bouts. So it doesn't have to be like a minimum of 20 minutes. So getting up out of your chair every hour just to break up the fact you've been sitting, going for a walk, even if you can only go for a brief walk at lunchtime, things like that are going to really help psychologically and physically.
And what would your top tips be for counteracting the physical impacts of stress for public-facing individuals, such as, you know, optometrists?
My top tips would be just totally try and take a break, even if it's for a few seconds. So that might be standing up and leaving the room or breaking off having to stare at a computer or any sort of technology that you're having to use, and just have those mental and physical gaps and you will see benefits.
Anna, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You're listening to Sound Optometry with me, Michelle Hanratty. If you've got a topic that you'd like us to cover, email us. The address is podcast@dockett.info, or use LinkedIn to message us here at Dockett. There's a link in the podcast description. So we've just heard from Anna about the striking impact stress has on our physiology. Next, I'm joined by Professor Vanya Durek, a neuroscientist and professor of physiology and pharmacology at Des Moines University in Iowa. Vanya will help us understand what the cumulative effects of chronic stress might be both systemically and neurologically. Hello, Professor Durek.
Hello, Michelle, and thank you for inviting me.
So when stress becomes chronic, what actually happens?
When stress becomes chronic, over time, we start losing our ability to regulate and turn off those stress responses. And this can happen for a number of different reasons. As Dr. Whitaker talked about, cortisol, it's one of the main stress hormones, can negatively affect the function of a number of different brain areas, especially brain areas within the limbic brain system.
Can you remind me what the limbic brain system is?
It's composed of a number of different brain areas. And from the evolutionary point of view, it's an old part of the brain that has some of those more basic functions like feeding behaviors, arousal, motivation, fear, regulation, memory. But limbic system is also critical in regulation of emotions and stress responses. So when this part of the brain becomes chronically exposed to those elevated cortisol levels due to chronic stress, we start losing our ability to regulate some of those acute stress responses.
So that would explain why we might have an increased or decreased appetite in response to chronic stress, or we might feel fear, or we might feel more anxious.
Yes, absolutely. So damage or dysfunction of certain limbic areas can present itself through a wide range of symptoms. These include behavioral and cognitive changes, as you mentioned, appetite dysregulation, but also sleep problems, memory loss or memory difficulties, and also mood changes such as sadness, feelings of helplessness, also anger, fear, irritability. So those are all these type of changes that, as you can probably see, can lead to anxious type of behaviors or anxiety and ultimately depression.
So can you tell me and our listeners a bit more about the different parts of the limbic system and how they might relate to our chronic stress response?
So there are a number of different limbic areas that are involved in stress responses. I'll mention a few of the, what I like to say, most well-studied ones. So number one, hypothalamus. So this is the brain area that Dr. Whitaker already talked about in relation to the increased production and release of cortisol. There's also another area, it's called the hippocampus. Hippocampus is generally, everybody thinks of it as a center for learning and memory in the brain, but it also plays a key role in regulation of stress responses. It can actually shut off the cortisol production.
So if the hippocampus is negatively affected by stress, does this mean that we're losing another means of shutting down cortisol production?
Yes, that's correct. There's also amygdala that's considered to be the center for fear in the brain, but it's also involved in regulation of emotions such as anger and happiness. And during the prolonged exposures to stress, the amygdala starts becoming overactive. And now you can see how that chronic stress can actually lead to that sustained anxiety because of you have feelings of fear and irritability and unhappiness and so on.
So all of these brain areas are having a diminishing effect. So I hardly dare ask, but what other areas of the brain are affected?
I'm afraid so. There is more. Another area that's been well studied in stress neurobiology is called the prefrontal cortex. It is primarily associated with higher cognitive functions, things like planning, decision-making processes, other executive function. However, it is also critical for regulation of emotions as well, including complex behaviors and responses to stressful stimuli. Now, generally, chronic stress leads to decreased function of the prefrontal cortex, similar to hippocampus, and this, in turn, can lead to a downstream effect of that overactive amygdala. And amygdala is responsible for excessive worrying and leading to that sadness, loss of pleasure.
So that's really leading down that slippery path towards burnout, isn't it?
Yes. In essence, you stop enjoying things that you used to do, like seeing your friends, reading a book, playing basketball, jogging, things like that. And then, you know, eventually that kind of leads to that increased anxiety state and maybe depressive state. And you can recognize a pattern of burnout as well.
So as stress becomes chronic and we have large amounts of cortisol circulating and we are gradually losing the means to switch off its production, this results in us feeling increasingly anxious, feeling low, having problems, planning and thinking clearly. Are there any physical changes happening in our brains?
Yes. Unfortunately, now we do know that there are many negative physical changes that occur in the brain during chronic stress. For example, healthy brain continuously making new connections between neurons. This process is called synaptogenesis. In chronic stress, synaptogenesis is definitely decreased in all of these areas of the brain that we just talked about. So the whole well-being of our neurons is being affected negatively by stress. The neurons actually start retracting their projections. They're called dendrites. They lose their ability to communicate. Chronic stress also leads to decreased levels of specific molecules, especially the one that's called BDNF or brain-derived neurotrophic factor. BDNF, the best way to describe it is if you think of it as a neuronal fertilizer. Okay. It is a critical molecule for neuronal well-being, neural growth, plasticity, you know, processes like that. And another process that's diminished with chronic stress is the production of new neurons in the adult brains. So the loss of our ability to make new neurons in the hippocampus is also part of the stress and depression pathophysiology in the brain.
So what you told me about the dendrites retracting their projections, it sounds as if they're trying to curl up under the duvet like me on a bad day. So are these physical changes, are they actually reversible?
Yes, and that's the good news. So some of these neural atrophies that we talked about and the retractions of the neurons and eventually neuron loss, that's part of that pathophysiology of stress and that leads to anxiety, depression, things like that. Well, a number of those can be reversed. Okay, and that's the good news. And that's what the antidepressant drugs do. I do want to point out that when you have a pretty significant amount of neural damage and atrophy and things like that, things are a little bit harder to reverse. However, antidepressant drugs have been shown to increase BDNF. So it's increasing that brain fertilizer. Antidepressants can also increase synaptic activity and they increase production of new neurons as a process.
So in terms of the effects of chronic stress and how it's affecting us, how do you think that impacts on our abilities as optometrists to carry out our work in the long term?
You know, most of my work is in animals.
Rather than optometrists.
But given the nature of your profession, it seems like the demands of the job and the expectations of effectiveness and things like that, I increased on a daily, weekly base type of thing. You do need to be able to have an alert, an agile brain, you know, to pick up and diagnose serious conditions and juggle a lot of things at once. So chronic stress definitely will reduce your brain health. And I like to use the term brain health rather than mental health, because it's important to remember that brain is just another organ, just like a heart. If something is going on with your heart or cardiovascular system, you'll go and get it checked out, maybe change your lifestyle, take some medications if necessary. So from that perspective, our brain is just another organ that can stop working properly, or certain parts of it can stop working properly, and you need to look after it. So we definitely need to keep our brains in good physical shape or good condition.
Yeah. I'd never really thought about it like that before in terms of actually physically keeping my brain healthy. So that's something, you know, that I think I'll definitely take away from this. I've also read that chronic stress can lead to inflammation as well. Can you explain a bit more about how this happens?
You're right to ask about inflammation, as it is another major chronic stress pathology that we observe in the brain and systemically as well. But I should start by saying that inflammation in the first instance is a beneficial process. It is designed to give us a response to a challenge, like a tissue injury, for example, infection, things like that. So it helps us heal and it helps us survive. But like many other processes in the body, that if it persists for too long, it starts losing that protective function and it becomes more deleterious. So over the last 15 to 20 years, it's become pretty well accepted that chronic stress does produce increase in inflammation. And this has been observed both in the brain and like different limbic areas, for example, that we just talked about, but also systemically.
And what impact does this chronic inflammation have?
Yeah, I mean, I do want to stress again that my work is primarily in animals, but we've learned a lot from our animal models. We've learned that inflammation in the brain does happen. There are increased levels of these pro-inflammatory molecules like cytokines. And all this has been linked to actually more damage in the brain that leads to altered mood. So especially developing anxiety and depression, but also other types of symptoms. So decreased cognitive function, problems with memory, problem solving, and things like that. But it can also lead to problems or dysfunction of other organ systems. So, for example, cardiovascular system or the GI system. Some of the more recent, and I find this very interesting, research has linked chronic stress and alteration in our gut-brain axis function. So this directly links the well-being of our GI with the function of the central nervous system, especially some of those emotional and cognitive brain centers that we talked about.
And can it lead to an increased risk of dementia in the long term?
Yeah, so when it comes to dementia and Alzheimer's, there have definitely been indications that brain inflammation may contribute as part of the pathophysiology processes. You know, even low-grade inflammation can be linked to other types of neurological disorders, but also systemic, as I mentioned.
So we've been talking about chronic stress, and to me, that means over a long period of time. But are we talking about these risk factors, these changes? Are we talking about these building up over a period of years?
Most likely not.
Oh, really?
Unfortunately, some of these types of brain pathologies probably can occur much quicker than years. It's kind of hard to say in humans necessarily when exactly some of these are developing, but I can give you an example from our rat models. So it takes about 3 to 4 weeks of rats, for example, and mice exposed to different type of stressors to start developing these depressive behaviors, but also some of these pathophysiological changes in the brain. So if it takes in rodent models 3 or 4 weeks, you know, with humans, you have to adjust for the lifespan and take that into the account. So it probably takes a little bit longer in terms of the time scale in humans, but I would say probably not, definitely not years.
So it does sound quite alarming, but I'm hoping it's not inevitable. So what do you think we need to do as optometrists to stop this downward spiral into poorer physical and poorer brain health?
The most important thing to do is to understand that chronic stress can definitely lead to a disease process. There is no switch that we can just turn on and off type of thing. And we definitely, you know, you need help because physiological processes are happening in your brain and body. And some of the things that we can do to help ourselves would be really focus on our proper sleep, improving our diet, nutrition, all the standard things for, you know, for good health. And the one thing that I can't emphasize enough, and that's exercise. And I know Dr. Whitaker already, you know, she mentioned exercise, but I want to point out that exercise actually works like an antidepressant. And so, for example, exercise has been shown to increase the levels of BDNF, that's that brain fertilizer, right? And the last thing I would mention, and this is something that sometimes we forget this, is that to have a good support system around us, especially our colleagues, okay? So those are the people who who I definitely understand what you're going through. They can definitely relate to the specific stressors of your job. And that's something that sometimes we forget about. You know, family support is important as well, but sometimes family members cannot always relate to exactly the situations and stressors that you're under that are related to your profession.
Mm. So I think understanding the impact of stress on our brain health is a real wake-up call for us. So thank you very much, Professor.
It was my pleasure, and thank you very much.
Don't forget that if you head to docket.info and search for sound optometry, you can find the additional reading materials and resources for this episode. And by listening to this podcast and completing the short exercise on the website, you can gain one CPD point covering professionalism, as well as leadership and accountability. We'll be back with another episode of Sound Optometry next month. The producers are Dr. Hilary Guite and Jason Hoskin. I'm Michelle Hanratty. Thanks for listening.